Blast off radio. Welcome to LibertyForce.biz Radio. My name is James Hodges, and you can also listen to this podcast at FairTaxFightClub.com. On the line with me is Jeff Locke. How's it going, Jeff?
It's going great, going great. Hey, James, can you also hear this on the KSFairTax.org site?
That is correct, and you can hear it at the MyJingo.com. So if you can't figure out a way to hear this show, probably should listen to it anyway. So, it's nice tonight to call in if you want to talk. The phone number is area code 347-633-9721. And yes, you can call in just like a regular radio show on the regular airwaves. Hey, this week I was able to go last Saturday down to Mike's Steakhouse, and I was able to listen to Alan Keyes give his speech. It was really impressive.
Well, you know, James, I heard part of that podcast downloaded. I thank you for putting that on so I could get an appraisal of it. Now, that's in Wichita, Kansas, where you live, right?
Yeah, and Earl Long was there, and the geezer, I can't remember what his name. Do you remember what his name is?
I think Dale Chaffee, I think. Dale Chaffee.
Dale Chaffee, yeah, he was there. I met him, and he's a really nice man. And they came all the way down from Kansas City. And there was a bunch of Fair Tax supporters there. I was really impressed. It was made up of three groups. It was one of the groups was where you oath takers, where you take the oath. And another group was KansasLiberty.org, I believe is the name of their group. And they're the ones who put it on. And I can't even think of the guy's name. Here, hold on a second. You talk, let me look something up.
Well, I know the oath takers or oath keepers are those who swear an oath to the Constitution, unlike what we have now where it's stretched and pulled in many ways like silly putty, except I'm not laughing because it ain't silly. I'll you know. And then, of course, the Liberty Group, I love the fact that they're getting behind the fair tax and that the five things they're going to come out for, the top one or two, of course, I think it should be the top one, but the top one or two is going to be an action of the fair tax at the state level here in Kansas.
Right, and they talked about that. I got to talk to him, and there's like seven plans at Art Hall. He's put together seven different plans, and he said he would back any one of them. And basically, as a fair tax organization, we just need to pick one that's closest to the federal version of the fair tax.
Well, that's great. I didn't know there were seven of them.
Right.
That's something I'll have to have you speak to because I thought there was one, and it would eliminate 36 or 37 statewide taxes and just go to a retail sales tax on new goods.
Well, I can't speak to them because I don't know what the difference is between them, but I just know that what it is they have like a light, you know, a Bud Light version, which just does a little bit. Then they've got your Big Mouth Mickey version, which is, you know, a full, about as much as everything in the kitchen sink, the 36-1 taxes that you were talking about, I imagine. But I haven't read anything about it, really.
Well, it's just a few more countdown days. When I went to the meeting last week, last Thursday in KC, they announced it and said that in 10 days, the plan would be out where we could all look at it and get an examination of it. So, you know, the main thing is this is a change we must make, and it's the perfect time for us to motivate people to see the need for it because of the lack of funding that's rolling into the government coffers. And, of course, when we fix it and the money starts rolling in tremendously because of all the growth, we got to make sure they don't grow government at the same rate that the money comes in.
Right. One of the reasons why they will not want to grow government any faster than the rate is because they have to raise the rate of the sales tax. And, of course, it's going to be transparent. So that's not going to work out too good because if they increase the amount of money that they're charging, they'd also have to increase the amount of the prebate to cover the cost up to the poverty level. So it's,
yes,
it's a self-defeating proposition from that point. And I believe that they're going to get more money than they're surprised at. And they'll have more time to spend on the spending side of government and stay away from the taxing side of government. Because that's what we really want to do. Is we're trying to fire the state legislature from deciding taxes, get something that works, and then keep it that way for a while. That way businesses can plan for it, families can plan for it, and the economy becomes more stable. And that's where we're going.
Well, you know, you frame it perfectly. I mean, there's a lot of businesses right now in Kansas that are holding off any kind of development, any kind of investments because of this cap and trade that's being held over them like a black cloud. They don't want to make any long-term plans. In fact, any short-term plans. They're not making a move because they don't know. In fact, that cap and trade is probably going to threaten the ability to have the Holcim plant that was approved and brokered to happen. So it's just a nightmare coming down the road. But not to get off track, yeah, a stable economy. Business wants to know that whatever they decide to do, with all that they have a risk for moving their whole business and their headquarters, et cetera, that it's going to be a stable environment. Everything's going to be predictable. They're not going to take a chance at a party getting in there and, you know, throwing a wrench into everything that was laid out. And, of course, the fair tax is natural economic law. It's just between you and that product or that service that you want to purchase that determines whether you contribute tax money to the government to perform its functions.
Yeah, that's right. And there was in the news, I read a newspaper, an online news article about some group over in England had their servers broken into. Basically, what was stolen was emails from this greeny weeny, you know, the world is warming up, global warming nutcase think tank. And in the emails, it indicates that they, from the very beginning, they knew it was a hoax. And
oh,
so,
yeah, you can.
Well, go ahead.
Well, you can tell it's a hoax because you always follow the money. If you follow the money, see where somebody's benefiting, you know it's a hoax. And who has the biggest investment in green technology? Da-da-da-da-da-da, Al Gore.
That's true. Yeah, and that's, to me, he ought to be sued under the RICO Act for fraud, really. I mean,
well, talk about speculation. He made it work because he was going to cause the need for speculation that it was going to happen.
He's not really delivering anything. It's all a scam, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. It all, you know, we have to understand what an arrogant thing it is to believe that humans could actually, you know, cause the next ice age or whatever they're talking about that could happen. These things happen through, you know, from what I understand, solar flares, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, I think my phone's going to go dead here, so I'm going to have to call you back on another phone. I apologize.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start one of the clips. And this is Alan Keyes, and this is the speech he gave at Mike's Steakhouse on Thursday. It's a very, very motivating speech. This is the first 2 minutes.
I talked about the current state of affairs in the country, and I would like everyone now, please, to welcome Dr. Alan Keyes. Politics in America. I got that bitch from the time that our politicians started smiling when they did their portraits and photographs. And we will know that we have saved the Republic when our politicians stop smiling when they do their photographs and portraitures. That's not funny. I mean that quite seriously. Because we engage in politics as if it is not a business of the life and death of our country. And it is. And in 2010, mark my words, we shall decide whether this republic survives at all. I've just gotten through spending some time with Ian Maxwell. He's not young anymore, but he was a young man when he designed the 50-star flag here, which will soon become the longest-running flag in America's history. We've had 27 versions of the American flag, and this particular one, the 50-star flag, will soon reach its 50th anniversary. I think we need to realize it, Mr. Senator, is that it's not only the longest-running flag in American history, it's very likely to be the last. And I don't say that as a speculation about some distant future. I would have. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I tried to warn folks that we were headed down a path that would destroy our liberty, destroy our republic, and leave us as the slave of the very form of government we have spent all the last 20, 30, 40, 50, 70, well nigh indeed the 200 years of our whole history fighting. Now, the individuals who will end the republic are not on the stage, they are in the seats of power. They have taken the most critical steps necessary to achieve that result. They have taken over the credit system, the banking system, the money is in their hands, and they have claimed the power to dictate our corporations and destroy our economic life. Business as usual in our politics is over. And soon the Constitution and our liberty will be over as well if we don't move now to make a difference. And how... But the problem is, y'all, we don't have issues anymore. We don't have issues. We don't have the health care issue, the energy issue, the this issue, the that issue. These issues are but illustrations of the simple fact that our liberty has been undone. Notice I don't say is being undone. We have already handed power to its destroyers, and they are moving faster than anyone would have thought. And by the way, don't think that what I'm saying here is some kind of partisan streak where the Republicans up here, many of you know I left the Republican Party, or at least two. And it left me precisely because while Barack Obama has marched through the door to plunge this nation into totalitarian national socialism, let's call it by its right name, it is not liberalism. It is not some benign version of European socialism. These people have preached, they have written, they have talked, they have been explicit about their desire to bring communism to this society and to put an end to the constitutional government that, according to Obama, limits the government's ability to do things for us. What these people say? Government's there to do things for us. No, it's not. Government is there to help us maintain the environment of order and security that allows us to build this country for ourselves. It is not the business of government to do it in ourselves. That's what Obama is about, but sadly, y'all, that's also what the crypto-socialists who have been altogether too long in control of the Republican Party are about. They pretend to be conservative, but the first thing on their mind right now is to make sure no Ronald Reagan conservative ever comes to power in the Republican Party or in America again. And then we have to decide whether that's going to be enough, because, you know, it's all well and good to know that we're in trouble. But we've got to know as well as what we're going to do about it. And there's only one thing we can do. And that is to rise up and take back our country. And by the way, I'll put it quite simply in one respect, and I'll be sort of broadening this theme this evening. I gave a speech for the first Tea Party Day back in April. And the theme of it, which continues, I think, to be the proper theme for our citizens right now, the theme of it was very simple. It's been a theme in American politics before. And if we manage to survive as a free people, we can hope it will be a theme periodically. Because you see, when you get to a situation where the whole elite leadership of your country is evincing a desire to overthrow government of, by, and for the people, and can I stop here for a second? If you go back and review the thinking of our founding fathers, they understood one thing for certain, that when you establish a government of, by, and for the people, the princely few, the ambitious, the talented, the folks who have, throughout human history, dominated societies in spite of the people, been worshipped as little gods and decided life and death because they were better, they were stronger, they were more talented, they had more prowess at war and other things. And they chomped all over the little guys and the people who actually built the society. This was their vocation and it will always be their vocation. Their energy, their talents, their abilities can be really useful to society. But that ambition is also deadly to liberty, deadly to dignity, deadly to the real freedom of individuals in that society, if you let them have a free hand. And that's why our Constitution limited government, limited their ambition, limited their ability to wield power without the consent of the people. And yet now, we are in the midst of a time when America's elites have decided that it's come time, the Constitution's passé, and they're going to overthrow government of, by, and for the people. Going to push sovereignty aside. And we see it in every respect. We see it in the health care proposals, the cap and trade proposals, the immigration proposals. Every single one of them has this in common, that it pushes aside the views, pushes aside the sovereignty, pushes aside the interests of the American people in order to pursue an agenda being dictated to us by a handful of elitists who think they know better than we do what our country should look like and where it should go. And we have to decide whether we're going to sit back and let this happen or whether we're going to do what has had to be done in every generation of America's life from time to time. Jefferson was entirely right, you see. Every now and again, people have to just rise up and show that they're going to stand on their rights, stand on their liberty, stand on their dignity, stand on their sovereignty, and not be trampled by those who are supposed to be their representatives, but start acting like their masters. We have come to such a time. Would simply be, and I kind of wish, I know there are a lot of Americans now who probably wish that somehow or another it could be arranged, but if we could all of us just kind of snap our fingers and take every single person presently representing us in the government and send them home, I'm willing to bet a vast majority of Americans. They wouldn't care about their labels. They wouldn't care about their records. Because I'll tell you something. The Democrats are bad for trying to force socialism down our throats, and the Republicans are bad for standing there and not calling it by its right name. Standing there and holding their protest and go through the door. I am sick of it. Sick of watching them betray everything we fought for our entire lives. And allowing this little tin pot would-be communist Nazi dictator. America, the very regime we fought so hard to keep from being established everywhere else in the world. We have come to the end of our patience because they are pushing America to the end of its rope. And that means a very simple fact, which is why I'm here. As Einstein said, though you don't have to be an Einstein to appreciate that, to keep doing the same thing over and over again and think you're going to get a different result is the very definition of insanity. So here we are in a situation, and I will be going into this in further detail this evening. We're in a situation where...
Well,
man, what do you think of that speech?
You know, Dr. Alan Keyes, I would have to say he's right on. He's very passionate, and I'd rather hear him speak than about anyone because he says it just like it needs to be said.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, although I do not want to see a third party run for president from Alan Keyes, and he was talking like a third party candidate there, and that kind of made me nervous. I agree with everything he was saying, you know, once the Republicans, if the Republicans get back in charge of the House of Representatives, then we're going to have to be on them just as hard as we've been on the Democrats to get something done, because they'll come up with every excuse in the world, you know, not to do what needs to be done and just go back to the way they were, which caused them to lose the majority in the House to begin with.
Well, you know, we got to remember, it's, you know, the Republican should be reform, reduce, and return. Reform, reduce, and return. Never grow. Never try to use government to solve it, because it's the initiative of the free people with a stake in the game, their own ability to own personal property and to better their own lives, that'll change the things that need to be changed.
Well, he kicked off a series of things that the Democrats are doing right now. He was criticizing them. But one of the things that the Republicans are doing, and one Democrat in Oklahoma, and that's the fair tax. And let's play a couple commercials so people understand that there are good ideas out there, and there are good ideas in Congress that just need your support.
Absolutely.
So what would you do for her?
We've got several programs that will help her. We just need to find out how much she makes. But the good news is, the less she does, the more we can help.
Yeah.
If I may, with the fair tax, we wouldn't even tax her income. So the more she makes, the more she has.
But still, a consumption tax could eat up a lot of her income.
Which is why at the beginning of every month, we're actually going to give back all that she pays in taxes on basic necessities.
You're going to give her back her taxes?
Every month. On everything taxed on basic necessities. But we're also going to give it back to you and to every American citizen.
Why?
Well, we believe taxes should be fair.
You want to live the peace of mind you deserve. Reforma, the Obama-Pelosi prescription for building a government takeover of health care. Anxiety and stress disappear. Reforma. Recommended by more lobbyists than any other healthcare reform. No worries. No concerns. Consult your congressman about Reforma before the August recess. Reforma. The side effects include bureaucratic waste and delay. Not recommended if you like your own doctor, want to keep your own doctor, or want to avoid the government prescribing your medical treatments. Not recommended for people who actually need medical care. The government can deny your health care based on patient age. Cost of taxpayers may vary and is more than you can possibly imagine. You should not support President Obama's Reforma if you're worried about the $1.6 trillion cost or the $219 billion deficit. Call your congressman or senator immediately if you're concerned by any or all of these side effects.
I found out that I never get in trouble if I don't answer one of those. So, never, Sam.
Mr. President, in talking about the continuing recession tonight, you have blamed mistakes of the past, and you have blamed the Congress. Does any of the blame belong to you?
Yes, because for many years I was a Democrat.
So what do you think of a third-party run?
Well, no, you can't have it. Ross Perot put Clinton in office because too many people wanted conservatives, Republican-minded, limited government-minded people who wanted efficiency in government, jumped off the Republican train and went to the Reform Party, and I was one of them. I was out in Wichita getting the Articles of Incorporation written for the Reform Party to be established in Kansas. So I was one of those defectors. At that time, because I wanted to get out of a party that wasn't answering the needs of the conservative and the limited government and the Constitution.
So yeah, George Herbert Walker Bush didn't help things when he broke his promise, his pledge, read my lips, no new taxes. Within 6 months after he was sworn in as president, he got up there with Bob Dole and a bunch of other weenies from the Senate and tried to justify why they needed to raise taxes after Reagan had created 22 million jobs with his tax cut and his reforms. And that's one of the flaws in the Reagan plan, is it didn't even survive the next president, which was his vice president. And that's why we want to get to the fair tax. We think the fair tax is going to be a lot harder to change.
Well, it is, of course, because it's natural economic law. You know, it pulls the whole face off the idea that you can tax any business and it's not going to end up punishing the consumer. And it says, okay, we're just going to tax at the simple, single incident of when the consumer purchases that product or service. That is the point to collect it, because you get rid of the embedded cost and you have the most efficient pricing that you can have and be competitive while keeping our jobs in America in a global economy. And then, of course, you know, with that system, it's self-limiting, because once everybody has skin in the game and everybody's paying the same rate on everything they purchase without exemption, well, that, you know, we're not going to be able to be coerced to play one against the other to raise that rate, because everybody will pay, you know, the same rate in terms of the per purchase, that is.
Well, Jimmy Anderson is the name of the guy who's running for Congress, and he's the one who spoke at Mike's Steakhouse before Alan Keyes, and he endorsed the fair tax. He talked about it a lot during his speech. I like what he had to say. He seems like an okay guy. He's obviously pro-life. I don't think Keyes would endorse him or have anything to do with him. And he is the only one of his downsides, though, is that he has no experience whatsoever in politics, which is a plus and a minus. Plus,
yeah,
some people, because like he said, any 535 people picked at random could do a better job than the current Congress, and I believe that. And that, you know, that goes like a million times, you know, if it was 535 Tea Party protesters picked at random.
Yes. Well, each one of those Tea Party.
You just forget about Congress doing the wrong thing. You got those people in power.
Absolutely, because every one of those Tea Partiers is out there because they've been taxed enough already. That's what TEA, taxed enough already, stands for. And they understand the Constitution, the limits of the Constitution, because it is a people-driven country, an individual liberty-spawned movement. We just... You know, anybody that says government is the answer, man, that should scare you to death. Because when government does it, it has to be taxed. Your taxes have to go up. They got to get the money somewhere. Because government doesn't run on anything but money they take from someone else.
That is correct. And they're responsible for the current crisis in the healthcare system. It's not the doctors or the free markets. It's the government. Here, let's listen to a guy who also believes that.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
That was Ronald Reagan, and he ran on that platform. He was for deregulation. He was for cutting taxes, and he was wanted to rebuild the military, because at the time the Soviet Union was threatening the United States with nuclear war, and it worked.
Well, you know, there's always people, though, that, for instance, I was speaking to an associate at work and found out this person was an admitted liberal socialist atheist. Liberal socialist atheist. And she said that the reason she believes that we ought to keep income tax and et cetera is because government should be used like a hammer, like a union, in order to provide justice for all, because they'll take from all those greedy people. She said greed was the problem. And, you know, when you get emotional in your decision-making, when you make your decisions like that, you see, that's trying to use government like a player to punish people and to hold out justice. Justice isn't through that particular branch of government, per se. Justice is through the Justice Department. When there's a wrong, it's brought out. You try it. You try it in court, among your peers, and you get a justified determination. But, you know, the point is, you know, I've gone on and on to this, and I'll always go back to it. You know, government cannot sustain itself. Government itself is not to play the role of a union or some other kind of strong-arm tactic. It's meant to simply promote fair trade, fair interstate commerce. You can't say Kansas, you know, we're not going to deal with Missouri. You know, we're not going to let you do that. Everybody will have to buy stuff in Canada. We can't do that. That's what they mean by interstate commerce. You know, that you couldn't play one state against another and say you're ever, you know, like that kind of a thing. So it's really, James, I just love your history because you come in over and over again and frame these issues just like what I've just tried to describe.
Right. I don't know how government can guarantee fair trade outside of regulating the interstate commerce, but fair trade, if companies want to, if other foreign countries want to dump their products in the United States, then I don't think we should penalize consumers.
Well, you're right. What I meant by fair trade is adopting the fair tax so that there wouldn't be an embedded cost. That's how good government could do it, by getting out of the way. Because every time you regulate something, the cost of that product that is produced goes up because they have to serve this other master called government that's regulating them and causing them to be inefficient.
That's right. And embedded taxes, you know, we play these clips over and over, Ronald Reagan, because we like Ronald Reagan, but he did a pretty good job explaining. Let's listen to this. This is embedded taxes.
The most dangerous myth is the demagoguery that business can be made to pay a larger share, thus relieving the individual. Politicians preaching this are either deliberately dishonest or economically illiterate, and either one should scare us. Business doesn't pay taxes. And who better than business to make this message known? Only people pay taxes. And people pay, as consumers, every tax that is assessed against a business. Begin with the food and fiber raised in the farm, to the ore drilled in a mine, to the oil and the gas from out of the ground, whatever it may be, through the processing, through the manufacturing, on out to the retailer's license. If the tax cannot be included in the price of the product, no one along that line can stay in business. And if you want to explain it simply, a loaf of bread. If the farmer can't get enough for his wheat to pay the tax on his farm, the real estate tax, he can't go on raising wheat. And so when you buy that loaf of bread tomorrow, just take a look. 151 taxes are in that loaf of bread, amounting to more than half of the price of the bread. The federal government has used its taxing power to redistribute earnings, to achieve a variety of social reforms. Politicians love those indirect business taxes because it hides the cost of government. During the New Deal days, an undersecretary of the Treasury told the Congress, indeed wrote a book in which he said, the taxes can serve a higher purpose than just raising revenue. He said they could be an instrument of social and economic control to redistribute the wealth and income and to penalize particular industries and economic groups. We need to put an end to that.
Well, you know, if they get the Art Hall plan to eliminate 36 taxes, that means, hopefully that means that, you know, the 151 he talks about being in the loaf of bread, you think, well, how is that possible? Well, the state of Kansas has 36 taxes that we're going to target for elimination with the fair tax. So it's all you have to do is have wheat, you know, go to another state where it's turned into bread. And then you have the equipment that's used to turn it into bread come from four or five other states. And pretty soon you can easily get 151 taxes in that loaf of bread. And that's what the fair tax is designed to do, is remove the embedded costs of government from the products that we make and put it at the point of sale. So you're talking on average 25 to 30% embedded taxes, and we're going to replace that with a 23% inclusive tax, which works out to a 30% sales tax that you can see on your receipt. So it only makes sense that we don't add the cost to government to any products we want to ship out of the state of Kansas from the state level, and add any cost to any products we want to ship out of the country to compete in the global economy. It only makes sense. The way we're doing it now has got to be the dumbest, absolute, archaic, and bombastic way to run governance, and only a moron would come up with the current tax system, and only a truly a demigod and somebody who believes in big government and big government controlling everybody's life would protect a system like this. And somebody who likes the fact that government produces more poverty than any other single organization here in the United States. And your friend at work is one of those people who likes poverty and likes people to be downtrodden and to be driven into despair. I hate to say it.
Well, you know, I had I finally, though, got this person. She's a person that is a greeter at the Walmart. But here's what it was. I said, go to fairtax.org and take a look at it. And when she finally let her mind, you know, open up to it, because she said, well, I went to college and I'm educated and I know about the fair tax. She said, no, she didn't know about it because she didn't understand what the prebate was. The prebate is the perfect way to make sure that no one pays any penalty of tax up to the poverty level, but it still unleashes our economy so that, you know, she said when I said about the prebate, she says, well, that's welfare. I said, no, it's not welfare. No, it's just if we're going to have the most efficient way to price everything without embedded costs, and we don't want anyone to be penalized on necessities of life, we just have to make sure that prebate goes to those people that will not, you know, be living above the poverty level for whatever reason. And usually that's a personal choice.
Well, yeah, and prebate goes to everybody. It just doesn't go to people.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It goes to every city. You just have to be a legal resident. That's all. A legal resident, whether you're rich, middle class, or poor, you know, whether you're Bill Gates or, you know, the person who just, you know, fell off a dump truck, you know, or something. Go ahead.
And rather than having Congress decide what products are going to be exempt, because, you know, they're corrupt. You know, the Bible says that for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and that really applies to members of congressmen as well as to anybody else. And so we take this out of their hands and we give it to you, the person that's your money. You know, you should be the one who decides, not some person in Washington, D.C., because you actually are going to do it based on your situation. There's no way in the world they can plan your life for you from Washington, D.C. It's just impossible.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, there wouldn't be as many lobbyists in Washington, D.C. if we had the fair tax, because there'd be no tax code to play winner loser with. Natural economic law says that, you know, when you purchase it, that should be the only decision of whether you're levied with a tax or not when you purchase it. And it's the best way to make it progressive, because the more you buy, the more you'll pay in tax. But that's okay, because you'll have no penalty on making money. So you can make money as fast as you efficiently can and just spend it, you know, pay the tax when you spend it. Hey, you know, we also got to talk about something that's even more insidious. In December, there's going to be a treaty signing in Copenhagen. Some World Trade Organization endorsed United Nations treaty on carbon. And you've got a lot to say about carbon and carbon emissions. You know, you said that earlier, James. What, you know, can you imagine what it would be if they started punishing our country because we have carbon releasing agents whenever we burn our fossil fuels and things, and then they make that money go to some sort of common pot over in the world. That's going to make a one world government, because that's how you create a government. You have the money control. When the money
right.
goes,
and the biggest polluters are the socialist countries, China, and I would assume that Russia was a. It's the same way. It was a big polluter when it was the USSR. In fact, I saw a clip one time of these kids sliding down this hill, and the hill was totally black, but they were sliding down on their sleds, and it was snow. But the reason why it was black is because they pollute so much over there that it just turned all the snow black. It was pathetic.
Well, I mean, it goes to show you that, sure, you can do very reasonable things to make sure you capture, you know, whatever, you know, small.
Right. You don't need government to figure that out. But go ahead.
No, you don't. You don't need government. You don't need a big stick, hold it over here, you're going to do this, or we're going to hurt you, or we're going to tax you. This is the total wrong thing with our tax code, in that it preaches that higher level or something of making people or businesses do something that you want them to do. I get so tired of that heavy hand of government saying, you know, we know better than you. We know what we need to do down the road. So we're going to punish you with a tax in order to get you to do it. But, you know, if Obama signs this United Nations treaty, it has to be ratified by the Senate, right? Wouldn't it have to be ratified by the Senate in order to become law?
Yes.
Okay, so, I mean, we'd have to really try to stop this, but we couldn't stop our Senate from having a debate on a diabolical takeover of our health care called health care reform.
Right. I don't know why they voted to let that go ahead, but they did.
Well, I had a glimmer of hope, though, because on Meet the Press the next day, several of the Democrats that said, we'll have debate on it, voted for debate, said we're not going to vote for passage of it, though, because of the public option that's in there.
Well, what was the vote count anyway?
It took 60 votes to get it to debate. So
Right. Well, what was the vote count?
60.
You know?
60.
Was it 60?
60, yeah. 60
okay,
out of 100.
They have one defector and it's over.
Yeah, one defector and it's over. That's right. And there's an independent, Joe Lieberman, that would defect and be able to do that. Because all the Republicans voted no. Every one of the Republicans voted no. But because Al Franken was somehow able to steal the election up there in Minnesota, they had their 60.
Well, let's finish the last portion of Alan Key's speech. And this
will
take about 10 minutes, and we'll come back.
Sounds great.
This evening. We're in a situation where we are being asked to keep doing the same thing over and over again. We've got to live within the confines, not just the confines, by the way, of a two-party system, but the confines of a two-party system in which the choices that are placed before us on election day will be dictated to us by a handful of party bosses who want us to roll over and play dead while they set up our choices and then pretend we're free. If you don't make the choices, you don't make the choice. If you don't lift up the people who are finally placed on your ballot, then you are being dictated to by whatever moneyed interest, whatever power interest, whatever dictatorial interest have decided who's going to be there representing you. If we want change in Washington this time, it will only come from candidates who don't have a chance of being elected unless we support them and back them and finally vote for them. If somebody on the air tells you they know who the winner is before Election Day, that's the candidate you should not vote for. How do people know who the winner is before we vote? If you know who the winner is before we vote, that means our vote didn't determine a winner. And if our vote didn't determine a winner, who runs America? Who rules America? Who decides the fate of America? That's what we need to be worried about. And so this time around, we need to reach deep into the American spirit, and we need to find what has been one of the fabled characteristics of the American people. My wife, who originally comes from India, and there is a word we use that she hadn't heard till she got to America. It's the word ornery. I think we need in 2010 to be the most ornery people and produce the most ornery result that has ever been seen in the history of this country. And if we do, I think we'll stand a chance of turning things around. Now I'm going to go more deeply into the whys and wherefores of all of this evening, but there's one simple thing I would like to leave with you. And you won't be surprised, those of you who know me, because it is the theme of all my political life. And it will continue to be, because it is the true, single, most important issue that confronts America today. And I tell you, and I will argue it, whether people like it, whether they don't like it, I can't help it because it just is so true. I believe strongly in the Constitution of the United States. I of course, have taken several times in my life the oath that we all took today in some form or other, as I was swearing that oath and undertaking responsibilities in the diplomatic service and in the U.S. government. But there's something I think we tend to forget now. And because we forget it, we are losing the Constitution. It's a simple question. Do you really think a house can stand when you have allowed its foundations to be blown up, destroyed, and torn apart? Answer yes or no.
No.
What is the foundation
of the Constitution.
The Word of God
explains why it is that there must be elections periodically, due process, why it is that we must have a limited government and checks and balances and separated powers in order to make sure that what happens? That the government power cannot be abused to assault and violate and destroy the unalienable rights which come to us not from government, but from Almighty God. Here is another thing I would tell you to predict the kind of people you need to send to Washington this time. You need to send folks to Washington who are not ashamed of this truth, but who are willing, every time they open their mouths practically, to remind Americans. What I just said isn't Alan Keyes' opinion, and it's not just my religious view or anything like that. The words of the Declaration of Independence ascribe our unalienable rights to the Creator. And there has been, time and time again, an attempt to substitute something else. But guess what?
It all boils down to the same thing. They can't get away from it.
You have a simple choice. Either the rights come from the Creator, and we, the people, therefore, derive an authority that requires that government be based upon consent. Or those rights don't come from the Creator, but are some kind of, you know, the best argument that is usually made by Antonin Scalia, who most people think is a wonderful conservative, but is actually a legal positivist who does not acknowledge the foundation of the Constitution. He thinks that the U.S. Constitution is what it is because of what was called in the parlance of law, the consensus gentium, that is to say, the agreement of the people. And so the words, we the people, at the beginning of the Constitution, they somehow constitute its claim to legitimacy. But guess what? People have agreed on all kinds of awful things in the course of human history. People have agreed, because they have more force, more power, more smarts, more this, more that, more the other thing, they have pointed to groups of people, and each and every one of you, if you examine your background, have ancestors who were part of such a group. The group that was the serf, the group that was the peasant, the group that was the worker downtrodden and beaten apart, the group that was the out when others were in, that was the down when others were up, and said they have no rights. And we can treat them as if they were dogs or dirt under our feet. As Jefferson said, some born with saddles on their backs and others booted and spurred to ride them. So you see, that we the people thing is all well and good, but the founders never intended to establish a democratic tyranny in America. Never intended to establish a place where, because people agree on injustice and wickedness and evil and oppression, that has the status of law. And there is only one way to guarantee that human beings will never think that their power and their vote and their majority and their talent establish the premise of justice. And that is when in every generation and in every mind and in every heart, it is eternally remembered that that justice is established by the will of God and no human being can touch it. We will deal first of all with the issues that have people denying that God's authority is relevant. The issues that are tearing apart our family, destroying our dedication to our children's future. Because if you can kill them in the womb, you certainly aren't going to care whether you burden them with deadly debt that turns them forever into slaves.
Right.
So we need to put it all back together. The coherent foundation and all its consequences.
Right.
The limited government, the free economy, the respect for family and parental authority that is the true basis of education. We need to put it all back together. And then we need to stand up asserting ourselves, not just because we want something. That's what these guys are thinking all the time, you know. Let's go and give them what they want. Are we not the sovereign people of the United States?
Yeah.
Now, those words, we the people at the beginning of the Constitution, means that we act as the sovereign. We decide not only what laws shall be passed, but what the form of law shall be, what the form of government shall be, what those who exercise government authority shall have to respect as the limits on their power. That's true sovereignty. But since when is it the business of the sovereign to think only of him or herself? Imagine a king got up every day and said, "What have you done for me lately? Where is my money? Where is my pleasure? Where are my women? Where is my power? Where is my this? Where is my that? Are you taking care of me?" It is not the business of the sovereign to worry all the time about somebody else taking care of them. It is the business of the sovereign to take care of the nation, to take care of the justice, to take care of the whole people, that they may survive and prosper for the future, and to take a special care of the generations yet unborn, to whom we owe our solemn obligation. If we are to be the sovereign body of the American people, if we are to be, as we have been set up by Providence, to be the kings, the queens of America, when are we going to start acting again as kings and queens should act, caring not for ourselves alone, but for our children and for our future and for our country and what it is to represent humanity and the world? That is in fact what's at stake in this election. And therefore we must look for the candidates of independent background and independent voice who are standing solidly on what is the true ground of America's independence. That great understanding that as our rights come from God, we should go down on our knees before no government. And as our rights come from God, we should rise up in confidence that the government is to be the instrument which helps us to shape the environment of our liberty. Not to do all things for us while gathering the power with which to destroy us, but to confine itself to that power that builds, while we retain for ourselves the role and activity that truly produces the result that is America's future. I think that if we can do that, then we can turn 2010 from an election in which we confirm that the Republic is dead, to an election in which, by reviving the true spirit and understanding that made America possible, we take the world's breath away by rising again from what they think now are the ashes of our liberty, to lift the mind and heart of all humanity back to that shining city on a hill, that wondrous city of liberty fulfilled under the rule of law determined by the justice of God, which was Reagan's vision, which is America's hope, and which will be again, if we let it, its destiny. God bless you.
So tell me how it works.
You know, it's probably changed since the last time I saw it, but the short answer would be, you want to take this one?
Sure. Okay. Imagine bringing home everything you make. You don't get taxed for saving or accumulating wealth, and your boss doesn't get taxed more even if he pays you more.
Wow, see, that's amazing.
So the end result of all that is the cost of producing products and running a business goes down, so things cost less. And on top of all that, imagine every criminal, non-citizen, and under-the-table worker also paying taxes.
That's amazing.
That's the fair tax. We tax what you consume as you consume it. And that's it.
For me to get these taxes collected.
Glad you asked, because there is a fair amount of information you need to be aware of.
That's your tax plan?
Oh, no, this is just the revisions for this year's tax plan. What I need from you is you need to keep track of all of your income, as well as any taxes that you've already paid, and also any gifts you received or gifts you've given to churches or charities or individuals throughout the entire year. Do you do any side jobs?
Every now and again.
Great, because there's some more information about that right here. Everything you need to know right here. So just simply compile that send it in to us. Be careful. Make sure there's no mistakes. If we do find mistakes, or maybe we can fine you or, you know, throw you in jail. So you might want to be aware of that.
And what do you need from me?
As an individual, nothing. As a business owner, or if you're doing side jobs, I mean, yes, you would have to collect taxes on that, but it's all right here.
Can I get a copy of that?
Well, those are two Fair Tax commercials that we play a lot, and we're going to keep playing them because we really like them and they get the point across. But I've got up right now on my screen the three declared candidates for the Republican, nomination for the 4th Congressional District in the state of Kansas. I got Mike Pompeo, he's running for Congress. I got Jim Anderson, he's the guy who was speaking right before Alan Keyes this Saturday at Mike's Steakhouse. And I got Dick Kelsey. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read their tax. Each of them have an issues section on their website. And I'm going to read what they have for taxes. We're going to start with Dick Kelsey because he declared first. On his website, he has listed Fair Tax as the title. The United States needs a complete overhaul of our tax system. The current system is aggressive, too complex, and hurts our economy. The most exciting possibility I have seen is the Fair Tax. In simple terms, this is a tax at the point. This is a tax at the point of consumption instead of a tax at every level of production. This method of taxation would eliminate the income tax, capital gains tax, plus many other types of taxes we pay. We would have our own money to spend as we wish. As we purchase goods and services, we would pay a tax on the goods purchased. The Fair Tax would help revive our economy and would help increase exports dramatically, causing many corporations operating outside the United States to return their production and operations to our country. So what do you think of that, Jeff?
Hey, there you go. This is a person that knows how to describe the Fair Tax, knows why we support it, because it levels the playing field in the global economy, and keeps jobs in America. Hooray!
Now, he does have another section on taxes that says lower taxes is the title. From John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush, it has been proven that lowering taxes actually raises the government more money, encourages people to work harder and earn more money. People will not work hard to grow a business. Government is going to take all their money. Well, that's great. The only problem with John F. Kennedy, Ronald Reagan, and George W. Bush, the next guy who came along after them, for instance, George Herbert Walker Bush, raised taxes. So the current tax system simply is, I don't know what you'd call it,
it's a bad habit
or, you know, a bad hangover.
I'll tell you why.
Drugs or, I don't know.
The hardest part about it to describe is that why did we adopt it? It was adopted in 1913, or at least established in 1913, with a slogan that said, "Don't tax you, don't tax me, tax that guy behind the tree." It was that was the slogan that passed it, and because they said no one out in the West would make enough money to ever be taxed, it was only going to be those people in the East, on the East Coast, that actually make enough money to be taxed. So that's when the socialists got into our government and began to play one against the other, because that's how you wrest power from the people, is you pit people against people, and that's what happened.
Okay, this is Mike Pompeo. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this name.
Pompeo.
Right.
It's Pompeo, I think. Mike Pompeo.
Right. Sounds like that city they got covered with lava. All right. This is his section. Oh, man, we're almost out.
Wait a minute. We're going to have to do this next time. Hey,
yeah.
Mike Pompeo will have his time on taxes. And who's the other candidate? Jim?
Anderson.
Jim Anderson. Okay, so Jim Anderson and Mike Pompeo will be right off the top the next time we meet, right?
Right. And what else you got? You got anything coming up that we can remind people about?
December 12th, tax subcommittee meeting that we need to get people to volunteer for. Go to ksgop.org, get volunteered for the think tank. We need you, folks. We need you. The Fair Tax will not be able to make it without your participation.
All right, man. We're out of here, and we'll see everybody next week.
All right, take care, James. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Scott, we're a team, and there's nothing to worry about. We come here, and we're going to conquer, and we're going to fix some. Is that understood?
Sure.
That's what we're going to do, sweetheart. We are going to go and get some.
Hey.
All right, people, on the ready line. Are you me?
Yeah!
Are you me?
Yeah!
Yeah! Hussars!
Get on the ready line, Marines!
Get down the line! Get on the ready line!
Yo!
Now go, Fairfax! Go, Fairfax! Go, Fairfax! Get the Fairfax! Let's go! Let's go!
Absolutely badass! Let's pack them in! Get in there!
Get in there, buddy!